excited to welcome you to Thought Leaders in Law and Business, presented by law firm Hodgson Russ, in partnership with the Business Journals. In this mini-series, John Thibeau, publisher of Buffalo Business First, sits down with Hodgson Russ attorneys to get their take on some of the nation's hottest issues and how they affect our communities.
Today, I'm joined by Jody Galvin, a partner and intellectual property litigation practice leader at Hodgson Russ, to discuss something that we likely all have come across in business at one time or another, the non-compete clause. A bit more about Jody's credentials before we jump into today's discussion. Jody's practice is focused on complex business disputes, and she has represented the firm's clients in both federal and state courts in New York and across the country. Jody has defended class actions for public and private companies relating to the healthcare industry, statutory compliance, business practices and pricing, employment, and shareholder disputes. She's assisted clients with responding to SEC investigations and has represented buyers, broker-dealers and brokers in court disputes and arbitration proceedings before FINRA, as well as conducted independent internal investigations for corporate clients in response to employee accusations of wrongdoing related to financial and employment practices. Jody also handles intellectual property disputes, including patent and trademark litigation and the misappropriation of trade secrets and ideas, and has represented both plaintiffs and defendants in diverse subject areas, including medical devices, energy, pharmaceuticals, life science, children's products, and sporting equipment. And if all of that wasn't enough for you, Jody was also an adjunct professor at the University of Buffalo School of Law, where she taught a course on New York civil practice. Jody, thanks for joining us today. Glad you could be here.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
And I think this is going to be a really important one for everyone. We hear this phrase, non-competition clause. I think everyone has come across it either personally or in their business. They are relatively common, but a lot of questions behind them. What exactly is a non-competition clause?
Non-competition clause is part of a family of restrictive covenants that employers use in employment agreements with employees. A non-compete, we'll use that for short, essentially prevents an employee from competing with her employer once she leaves the employment. So it's a restriction as to who an employee can work for after they leave your company. And it typically has a time duration, 6 months, a year, 2 years, and defines who the employee can or cannot work for after that employment period.
So I know that I have come across this, certainly our issue with publishing, there are non-competes in place, but many times we've often heard that these are non-enforceable. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit more in the discussion. I don't know if something, should we jump into that now? Does that vary by industry? Or you tell me what you think the next step is. I know it's an important issue and topic for the legal field. Maybe we should start with why, and then we can get into some of the more specifics later.
Okay. Well, the reason why it's important right now in the legal field and across industries and across the country, frankly, is because there are shifting sands of jurisprudence, so to speak, that are developing around this area. So all of the states are involved in making changes, and the federal government recently threw its hat in the ring as of January of 2023. So there's a lot of activity around this space right now.
That's really interesting. So this traditionally has been something that has been handled on a state-by-state basis, but now the feds look like they're going to try and get involved to kind of cover it universally for the U.S. Could you talk a little bit more about that and how that works?
Yep, that is correct. Up until just recently, restrictive covenants and particularly non-competes were governed by state law. So when I was a very junior lawyer and if somebody came to me with a non-compete question, I would go to this great treatise that was state-by-state survey of non-competition law. And you'd go to the state that you wanted to know about and you'd look it up. That has changed in theory. It's not actually law yet. The federal government did in January, as I said, of this year, issue a proposed rule that would be a nationwide ban on certain kinds of non-compete agreements.
How would that work? For instance, I worked for a company that was headquartered in New York, but I had a California employee who may have left. Whose law governs that? Is it New York? Is it California? Or are we just getting into more of the jumbled mess, which is why the feds are getting more and more involved?
Yeah, it is. It is a jumbled mess. Typically, the states that have come forward and banned non-competes are actually protecting their residents. So citizens of each state are those who are protected. California is a perfect example, because what California's rule, which is basically a total ban against non-competes in garden variety situations, has said is we will protect our employees. And if your employment agreement specifies a different state's law, we'll set that aside to protect our residents.
Yeah, that's not shocking to me. California certainly be one of the more generous states to employees than any. Maybe next step would be to talk a little bit more about what this new proposed rule looks like from the feds. What are they saying? What are they thinking? I mean, really, where does that stand in the pipeline? Where do you think the next steps are?
Okay. Well, I guess we'll start with the question mark of whether this rule will be adopted, and if so, when. Recent commentary has indicated that the Federal Trade Commission, which is the regulatory body that issued the rule, probably won't be in a position to actually adopt the rule until sometime in early 2024. Because that's an election year, it's hard to say whether it will, in fact, be adopted in 2024.
Right.
That being said, we'll reverse back a little bit. And so the proposed rule came about after significant evaluation and analysis of the effect of non-competes on business and upon employees. 1 in 5 employees has either a current non-compete obligation or has had a non-compete obligation in the past. And many employees don't really understand what the contours of that obligation are, and maybe don't even pay attention to it because it's presented to them in typical onboarding situations. So what the FTC concluded was that non-competes generally are bad for business, they're bad for innovation, and they're bad for employees being able to move around in the fields that they have chosen and become skilled in.
So Jody, what are some of the specifics on the FTC proposed rule and some of the details that may be going with it?
The FTC proposed rule has carve-outs where a non-compete will still be enforceable. And some of those are in connection with sale of a business, a high-level executive. Not-for-profits are exempted from the proposed rule at FTC. The FTC website is actually really helpful on understanding what was behind the rule and the logic for proposing it. Most interesting to me as a practitioner is the comment period, which is required as part of the administrative rulemaking process. During that comment period, which lasted from January through April of 2023, the FTC received 27,000 comments. In its comment.
That's a lot.
So people are paying attention. From time to time, I reviewed the comments just, you know, to see what the sentiment was and how the tide seemed to be moving. There's everything from individual employees detailing their experience with having non-competes enforced to very sophisticated lobbying groups who have posted long letters justifying why non-competes should be enforceable in certain situations, like, for instance, investment banking or certain scientific fields. So it's a really interesting group of comments, very diverse, and has generated quite a bit of attention.
What's the next step with the comments? Someone will be going through them, and really curious how you take 27,000 comments and try and figure out how to work that into the proposed ruling.
Yeah, I suspect that the comments are being categorized by individual employees versus institutions or lobbying groups, and then probably according to industry, because some of this is very industry specific. As you noted in the beginning, you know, publishing, marketing and advertising, those are very common industries where non-competes come into play in certain scientific fields. So I suspect they'll be put into buckets according to industry and then sorted through. It is a lot of information. And I think one of the reasons why the rule will not be adopted promptly is because there was so much public interest in it. A footnote to that is, and this is a little bit of legal geek, but I think it's important to know for employers to know that this could be in disarray for some time, is that some commentators have questioned whether the FTC even has the authority to issue
to go in
like this.
I was going to ask you about that. Okay. So
yeah. Yeah. So that is something, again, it falls a little bit into the legal geek category, but there is a very serious question as to whether the FTC has circumvented the standard legislative process by issuing this rule. So the expectation is once it's adopted, it will be immediately challenged.
Is this something we could potentially see going to the Supreme Court for a ruling?
Yes.
Okay.
100%. 100%. I believe this will be something that's challenged immediately and fast-tracked through the court system because it is an area of question whether it's appropriate at all for the FTC to get its hands involved in this and whether this is something that should be Congress's job.
Clearly, there's going to be some things that vary here. An employee decides that they're going to leave and go to another company. Is a non-compete more enforceable at that point? And how do you handle some of that intellectual property that they may be leaving with moving to another company as well?
Well, the interesting thing about the proposed FTC rule and the proposed New York legislation, which we'll talk about in a minute, is that neither one of them touches other restrictive covenants under that family of restrictive covenants. So for instance, a non-solicitation where you can't go and solicit customers directly to come and onboard with your new employer, those are still enforceable as long as they're reasonable. Non-disclosure agreements are not affected by a ban on non-competes, and other obligations like a duty of loyalty and a fiduciary duty that an employee may have are not affected by this non-compete. So an employee who leaves, who may not be subject to a non-compete by legislation or otherwise, still has those other obligations. You still have to be a good soldier when you leave your employer. You can't take stuff with you and use it to compete unfairly.
Got it. Differences in a non-compete, an employee decides they're going to leave versus an employee who may have been laid off or terminated. Is a laid off or terminated person still under the obligation of a non-compete if they've signed with a company, or is that broken once the company has ended the relationship with that employee?
Well, I'll give you the classic lawyer answer to that one. It depends. It depends on the term of the agreement itself. Generally speaking, however, an employee who's terminated or laid off will not be subject to that non-compete. So if the employer goes to try to enforce a non-compete against somebody that it's decided it no longer wants to work for it, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't get rid of the employee and then also try to prevent the employee from working somewhere
else.
Yeah. There are exceptions that employers may include in their agreements. For example, if an employee is terminated for cause, for theft or bad conduct, the employer may still be able to enforce that non-compete, but it varies on a case-by-case basis.
Got it. Thank you. So let's talk. The feds are coming in. They've got some proposed changes. It could be 2024 based on an election year. It could be 2025. What are the states doing? And I know, you know, New York State is looking this as well. But what are their next steps with respect to the non-compete as this process continues to unfold?
Well, we'll start with what the landscape looks like, and then we can talk specifically about what's afoot in New York, because that's a very recent development here in New York State. Nationwide, there are four states that have adopted statutes essentially banning non-compete provisions in employment agreements. And that's California, North Dakota, and Oklahoma. And Minnesota recently jumped in about 2 months ago and said, no go.
That's funny. Not four states that I would normally see together on something like this.
Yes, it's a very interesting mix. In addition to those four states, there are 11 others and the District of Columbia, which have some variation of a ban on non-competes. Some, for instance, may have a wage threshold that an employee who is under a certain wage threshold cannot have a non-compete enforced against her. Those states vary on a state-to-state basis, but it does show you that there is a landscape that is potentially full of minefields if you are an employer with multi-state operations. and for us, particularly here in Western New York, Ontario, Canada has banned against non-competes, which is interesting. And so in Canada, for those with cross-border operations, it varies on a province-by-province basis.
Really interesting. I never would have even, that wouldn't have even popped into my head. But thanks for pointing that out. One to certainly keep in mind. So with the changes coming down, you know, what does that mean for enforcement of non-competes that are existing right now?
Well, for those, if an employer is in New York, the employer can certainly seek to enforce a non-compete as of today.
Okay.
There is no change with respect to that in New York currently.
What would this also mean? I would assume that this is time for employers to start thinking and doing some prep. What does it mean for them as they're starting to pull together employment agreements for new employees that may be coming on?
Well, that is a great and very practical question. And I think what a best practice would be for any employer is to do an audit of what their current agreements look like. Actually have someone in human resources paw through those files and take a look to see what is the scope of any non-competes we have in current agreements. Where are those employees located? Because they may have relocated. Certainly during COVID, we saw a lot of movements of employees and some on a permanent basis to jurisdictions where maybe there is a ban on non-competes.
Right.
So actually take a look and prepare some sort of table showing what the current state of affairs is, an audit, so to speak, to prepare and get ready for if, in fact, there is a ban on non-competes that's coming down the pike in New York. You want to get ready and not get caught short, because the proposed legislation in New York, which we should talk about in some detail, would require rescission or a clawback of any existing non-competes. So I think dusting off the files is a great way to get started and get ready.
We've been talking about New York State. Why don't we jump into that now? Why don't you kind of take us through what some of the new things that are being proposed are? Just certainly you and I are in New York. It is a large state, and I'm sure many of our listeners are also. So bringing everyone up to speed on current events there, I think would be a great thing.
Yep. New York is a really interesting case study in legislative process. There has been a proposed ban on non-competes kicking around in the state legislature for a couple of years now with zero activity. I mean, if you looked up the legislative history, there would be the bill and nothing else. And then all of a sudden, in June of 2023, that bill was fast-tracked and was adopted by both legislative branches in New York State and is now sitting on the governor's desk.
So what took place to get that from nothing happening to fast track? Anything that we should know, or is it just it was time?
I have to tell you, nothing that's publicly available. That's for sure. You know, it could be that because of COVID, for instance, employment situations were already sort of on unsteady footing with remote employees and people being laid off. And maybe it just wasn't a priority for the state during that time. I don't know what fast-tracked it. And frankly, it left a lot of commentators puzzled.
Okay. What else detail-wise should we know about the New York State?
Well, the detail is that there is no detail. And that is why we believe that this was passed at the end of June by the state legislature. That's why we believe it's been sitting on the governor's desk since the end of June, because there is no detail. There are no exceptions for what one would commonly expect to be present in a ban on non-competes. For instance, there is no exception for a non-compete in connection with selling your business. There is no exception for high-level executives. There is no exception for those who are uniquely skilled, scientists, high-level manufacturing engineers, persons with a set of skills that cannot be replicated and that would cause serious damage if they went and, you know, took their skills to another employer. So what's been happening since that time, I presume there's been a lot of private discussions, right, with industry groups and their lobbyists working pretty hard in Albany to try to convince there to be some amendment to the bill that's been passed. Publicly, there has been a fair amount of commentary, letters to the governor and things of that nature, which urge that the governor send it back and reject it as drafted to account for some of those exceptions that I've detailed, because it's bad for business.
Got it. So moving forward, but it may be going back, and certainly some more work that needs to be done with some of the details that every employer and employee are going to need. What impact does a ban or limitation on non-competes have on other employment restrictions or obligations?
A ban on non-competes has zero impact on other employment restrictions. Non-solicitation clauses, whether they be, you know, you can't solicit customers or you can't come and poach employees, those are still valid. And those, frankly, they're not under assault by any stretch in any of this legislation, whether it's in California, the FTC proposed rule, or New York. Those restrictions, I think, will stand firm. I mean, they have to be reasonable in order to be enforced. You can't bar somebody, for instance, from soliciting customers for 5 years. You know, it still has to be a reasonable restriction, but those are left untouched.
So as we kind of wrap up our discussion today, what is your thought and what advice are you giving to employers? What should they be thinking about and doing right now on top of the great advice of already looking at that audit to see where they stand at this point?
Some clients that I have spoken with don't really know why they have non-competes across the board for every employee. So I think, you know, taking a good, hard, realistic look at whether non-competes are really essential for every single worker at a company is an important step to take. I frankly think it's good faith as an employer. It's getting yourself ready for any potential legislation that comes along. And frankly, I think it's a good recruiting tool because employees are going to become more savvy about these particular clauses. And I think as a recruiting tool, it's probably a good thing to say we don't require that for most employees. So I think that's a good step. I think smaller employers who may not be working with counsel on a daily basis or a regular basis need to take a good hard look at the forms that they're using for employment agreements. A lot of times we see bear traps where somebody has just recycled an old agreement and not accounted for these many changes that have happened over the past 5 years and 5 months. So they may be using something that's just de facto unenforceable without even knowing it. And I think that's a relatively easy fix. So we've, you know, basically advised our clients, keep an eye on things and, you know, pick your poison about when you're choosing to enforce a non-compete, because in this time where there's so much disarray in the law, I could see judges being reluctant in a close call case enforcing a non-compete. You know, some cases are slam dunks. They're just not close calls and the person should not be competing. But a lot of them fall into that gray zone where you may or may not want to make the investment in trying to enforce in court. And in those close call situations, I think you need to do a very serious risk analysis as to whether you're going to end up making bad precedent for yourself and your current agreements.
Jody Galvin, partner and intellectual property litigation practice leader at Hodgson Russ, thanks for joining me today and for shedding some light on this important business issue. To our audience, thanks for taking the time to join us today for another chapter of Thought Leaders with Hodgson Russ. And I hope you can join us for our next discussion sometime soon. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for downloading Thought Leaders in Law and Business. Listen to new episodes bi-weekly on Wednesdays and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more, visit bizjournals.com, Hodgson Russ Thought Leaders. This podcast does not provide legal advice.